All right, so part two. Here we go. So, just to add a bit to the whole fog of war aspects to this, and you'd sync up, and then boom, you get all their, you see where their accounts are, right? All the updates there, and so you just know they're publishing from this site. And it is an interesting question how fast these cloud chains will grow, because you have one dynamic that it's not trying to be global money, it's economic activity of one social media person. So you'd expect much less throughput in that regard, but then you also have the fact that all the notifications and root stuff would all be op returns. So how that dynamic would balance out, I don't know. But more importantly, what I wanted to touch on is there's going to be tons of block explorers, obviously, as there is with all the current Bitcoin and altcoins and everything else, right? So you just have, to go. It's one person's running a node, they run a block explorer, you check that out. You don't necessarily need to be running a node to get this information, right? And of course, I spoke about this concept of the universal blockchain explorer, which would sort of try and track as many, or universal cloud chain explorers, right? Which would try and track, like, say, everyone's, they'd run a node of everyone's cloud chain over a certain difficulty, and then you could kind of search an address in the system for balances on, across chains, right? And get this like accumulated cloud chain balance, which would be pretty cool. Now, that of course, you would expect there'd be some sort of market denominated forces or incentives there. So, how it would work, I don't know. Maybe someone would say, if you have a difficulty over a certain level, I'll list, I'll run an explorer in my universal cloud chain, and you're gonna have to pay me this much in your cloud to get it listed, right? And obviously, if it's above a certain difficulty, that has a certain value. So we'll see how that all plays out, but I want to get into time, right? So, all of the timestamps in the identity blockchain, as I spoke about in the white paper, are based off this concept of existence proofs and alternating with occurrence proofs is what I call them, right? So you have this alternation of, well, it happened before this time and it happened after this time, so you get fairly accurate timestamps. And so, as it is, these depend on Bitcoin and Litecoin, right? And so, why are Bitcoin and Litecoin timestamps reliable is a question I've been thinking about. And further, we have this so-called six block differential rule, which works, but it could be cleaned up a bit, possibly, I was considering. So that rule, right, is based off of the Bitcoin blockchain, right? You have a header on your identity block, which has a timestamp using Bitcoin, Litecoin, and your own timestamp. And according to the Bitcoin block, you have to wait six blocks, and the reason for this is so you have a sort of Boolean, right, value or binary value of accepting the block. It's either valid or it's not. In other words, that timestamp, which is the most recent, the header of the identity block, will either be in the chain or it won't, right? Because if you just forced cloud chain blocks to update things immediately, then you have this situation of forks, right? Because what if the Bitcoin block header doesn't make it into the chain, and then you have cloud chain blocks which depended on it, and then in the future you have ones which say it didn't get in the chain. And so, but really the question is then, where do you want to have forks, at the cloud chain level or at the Bitcoin level, if that makes any sense? Because you're going to have them, and that's totally okay. Forks are not, forks happen in every day in Bitcoin and in every coin. And then what's more important is that they're resolved. So it's just a question of at which level do you want to have forks at, right? So the point was to, A, sort of ensure that everyone agrees that an identity block is either valid or it's not by that time, and B, also to just sort of give a set time when everyone knows that everyone is going to update, start updating their cloud chain blocks, you know, considering that the identity block is valid, so they know, you know, well, someone solved a cloud chain block, and you know, they didn't update their thing, and they should have exactly at this time. So that was the secondary point, so everyone knows when to update, right? So I'm thinking, how does this all actually, what does this all look like in practice, right? You know, when this is all, everything's ready to go, it kind of presumes that you're going to be running four different nodes, right? Which is interesting. Potentially it's a bit much, but then again, you know, you're going to run a Lightning node, you got to run a Bitcoin node. So this is just Litecoin in addition, and then you have these two presumably much more lightweight nodes. But nonetheless, it's not nothing, and it's something to consider that could be mitigated if possible. So then you start thinking about it more, and it's like, well, really, they just need, they need to be able to check these timestamps in the identity blocks, right? And they also have to have an idea, you know, considering you have this six-block differential rule of the Bitcoin blockchain and when blocks are being published in order to execute that rule. But so you, going back to block explorers, right? And this time in a different aspect, you could, to mitigate this requirement of running four, well, you could say, well, maybe you just have to run, you could plug in, it's like, do you want to plug in a Bitcoin and Litecoin node, or do you want to plug in any explorer that you're going to trust for Bitcoin and an explorer that you're going to trust for Litecoin? Now, of course, there's a trade-off there, because if you happen to be trusting an explorer that, you know, gives you the wrong information and causes you to have an invalid identity block acceptance, you know, in your cloud chain as a miner, and we're talking about miners here, right, would have to run either all four, they'd have to run the two, and then you'd have a plug in, you know, an explorer type of thing to use for your validation, right? So you would have that trust, but it kind of be like, well, if you get it wrong, your block is rejected. So you would kind of choose that trade-off. In reality, you know, most block explorers, you're going to get the right information, right? But let's take a step back. So I'm thinking, how can we kind of clean up this rule, right? It depends on cloud chain miners updating their cloud chain blocks according to a different blockchain. That's kind of confusing. I mean, it could work, but there's no reason it couldn't, but it maybe it could be cleaned up a bit, right? So then you start thinking about, well, maybe a different recent realization, right, is that you will be proposing blocks with a cloud chain, a root cloud chain transaction, right? And so that in and of itself is a much cleaner process than certainly what we had before, right? Where it's just like everyone is watching your website, and once you post that block, they see that it's published, right? Because that's kind of like iffy. It doesn't have this non-repudiation sort of thing, because you wouldn't like remove a proposed block and then repropose it, but it doesn't have like a sort of by changing this to proposing a block officially with the block hash as a root transaction. By doing that, you have the non-repudiation of the digital signature and encoding, right? And further, the signature gives it that, and then the blockchain itself, by confirming the transaction, the cloud chain, by confirming Root's proposal of the identity block, sort of solidifies this with the confirmation, in the same way, a transaction is solidified once it's confirmed, or at least that process begins, right? So what if you moved this rule, in addition to officially proposing the block, what if you changed this rule to be based on cloud chain blocks? And so cloud chain transaction is proposed by Root, and once it's in the blockchain, then six cloud chain confirmations after is the new differential rule of when cloud chain miners update their block to accept an identity block. And then boom, everyone, it's just much cleaner, because cloud chain miners can much easier can calculate this sort of thing in a much cleaner fashion, right? And so they'll be running their cloud chain, and they'll have to certainly, at a minimum, be running the identity blockchain as well. Now, what that's actually going to look like in practice, we had spoke about this sort of master follower or leader follower database system for the identity blockchain. And perhaps it will be that, and but the thing is, it's going to have sort of like I don't know if you call it a checksum, but sort of just a check that the tip of the cloud chain is in sync with the tip of the identity blockchain. In other words, the entire cloud chain is sort of like almost like a pruned version, right? Because all these cloud chain blocks have the most recent identity blocks hash. It's sort of like a summarized version of the identity blockchain, right? So here's how it looks like, right? They're running this master leader identity blockchain system, and so Root, who is of course the content creator, right, proposes an identity block by first updating the identity blockchain, which is he's the master, right? So he's the only one who can do that. But so there's a temporary incongruence, obviously, because it hasn't been accepted by the cloud chain network yet. So he updates that database, and it's sort of, out of consensus for six blocks until, obviously, so he that's the first step, and it's officially proposed, though it's by the network or considered proposed with his cloud chain transaction, which is, especially encoded transaction from Root, which designates that he's proposing a block and has the block hash within that encoding. So everyone knows, oh, He proposed a block on the cloud chain, and then they know the differential rule is based on that cloud chain block, which that transaction is confirmed in, right? So the clock starts then, and they know, oh, all right, well, I have to check this identity block. I have the hash. Let's go to the identity blockchain. Yep, he's added one block, and it meets the hash, and then they check all the other requirements, and if they accept it, they all know on the sixth cloud chain block, then they all update their hash to represent accepting the identity block, and so they have the exact block, which that will be changed, and if someone, proposes a cloud chain block that doesn't, that's rejected, right? So anyway, this whole scenario got me to thinking, well, that'd be a much cleaner way to do it. And then so you have to think of everything. You think of also there's the rule that the identity block header has to be more recent than all the other references, but well, maybe you don't need an identity block header because the original six block differential rule was based on the identity block header, but now it's based on this official proposal in the cloud chain. So really, the cloud chain transaction serves as the identity block header, in a sense, right? Or I guess the timestamp, we should say, not the header. And so this just seems like an overall cleaner way to do it. Root updates the master database, right? He proposes this transaction and then it's confirmed, and then boom, six blocks later, they accept it, given it meets the requirements and update the cloud chain. So this in turn though got me to thinking, so you still, even with this upgrade of how you'd be doing things, you'd still kind of have to have a view at least of the Bitcoin and Litecoin blockchain as a miner to check all those timestamps of references, right? And so it's like, well, is there any way to get rid of that perhaps? Like, how necessary is that, right? And so there's two questions there, which is how important is it really to the system to have these like pristine timestamps, right? Well, you do want to have good timestamps, it's true. Like you don't want to have them wildly off, but you still have this amazing system. Without that, you still have the history, and you could. What I'm going to get to, the second question is like, how reliable is the Bitcoin timestamps compared to, say, using your own cloud chain for timestamps, right? So, like, what, in other words, what if you just started using cloud chain blocks for TSN references for the timestamps, like just using those proofs, right? So in summary, this just got me thinking, like, could we potentially get rid of that whole aspect of even needing the Bitcoin and Litecoin view and just base everything on the cloud chain, right? And so, well, let's take a step back, looking at identity blocks, you have these cloud-based references, right, as it is, which serve as existence proofs, right? And then you have the occurrence proofs throughout in the references. So you did all this whole rigmarole to sort of ensure that people are taking existence proofs as much as they're proposing blocks, and then you have the occurrence. Well, so you could still have that aspect, at least, of alternation of existence and occurrence proofs with the cloud chain alone. So, in other words, before we even found out about open timestamps, we sort of figured out this concept of existence and occurrence before that, with you could literally just do an op return in the Bitcoin blockchain, right? Before we even had a notion of the cloud chain. So basically, open timestamps are doing that same function, except they're free, right? And Bitcoin transactions are the most expensive in the cryptocurrency network. But if you take a step back, you realize that by proposing a block to the cloud chain network, you're doing an existence proof anyway, right? And so further, if you just change those references to cloud chain timestamps, they would still be occurrence proofs, but based on the cloud chain, you'd have to put the cloud chain block number and then the timestamp of the cloud chain. You would have recreated it, and then you get rid of that whole necessity of having to run some view of the Bitcoin and Litecoin blockchain. And so you'd only have to run the cloud chain and the identity blockchain, and it would be much more efficient and smooth. Now, this does bring up some big questions, though, of how easy, like, how dependable will the cloud chain timestamps be? And this, like, opens up a Pandora's box, which is still necessarily, you know, hugely important to consider in its own right, is just how, you know, how hard would it be to game cloud chain timestamps? And because this has other implications, right? So miners, if they can game it, they can mess with the difficulty. And this was a whole thing with Bitcoin Cash. And they did this whole emergency difficulty adjustment thing, which really, like, totally, you know, didn't work. It made them have really periods of very frequent blocks and then very slow blocks because miners gamed it. And then they had to switch to a 1 day difficulty period as opposed to the 2 week. And so that kind of works at least better than the other one. But like, why they even changed that in the first place is the question. So like, if they had just kept the regular difficulty adjustment, you know, how would they have fared? So that's the question we have, right? So why are Bitcoin timestamps fairly reliable, right? This is a huge thing. So Bitcoin, Satoshi had this sort of ingenious sort of countermeasures put in, these two opposing ones. The first one is called median past time, or the median past time rule, which says that every miner proposing, or any miner who solves a block, must have a timestamp on that block, which is greater than the median of the last 11 blocks in the Bitcoin blockchain. And then they also further have the future time rule, which says that that timestamp must also be, I believe, within an hour in the future from that node's time, I believe it is, or, you know, the nodes around it. I guess that part I have to look into is not as clear. But anyway, that rule is the essence of what gives Bitcoin fairly reliable timestamps, which is could not be more important, because if you could game the timestamps, you could game the difficulty algorithm. And further, you could also game it in other ways, like with time lock transactions and such. So it's pretty damn important. But that's basically the essence of it. And so we'd have that same rule. Now, of course, a lot of, like, that rule, as with any other rule, sort of depends in part on having a truly decentralized network of nodes. In other words, every rule, including that one, is really enforced because you could so heavily depend upon them because Bitcoin has the most decentralized network. So there is something to that, but Bitcoin itself started somewhere, and it started with Satoshi, and it started with one client and one node, right? And then it grew to what it is today. So it was able to overcome the same things, and any decentralized network has to start from one. So, were the timestamps reliable in the early days of Bitcoin? I think they probably were because of this rule, and obviously it's easier to game the system then, but it all comes down to everyone knows that they're running a system to be in consensus and to run the rules of the network, and if they don't, they'll get kicked off no matter how much hashing power they have. So, we would have the same rule in place, and this is just my first thoughts on it, but if you could get away with that and you could just get rid of that whole aspect and just depend on the cloud chain's timestamps. And I want to wrap it up here soon, but it also big brings into question bigger questions, which I've obviously been thinking about in terms of 51% attacks and all that jazz. But at the end of the day, it all comes down to game theory, and people tend to, the risks are real, but people tend to overestimate how practical they are or how realistic they will become to be executed when there's no reward to be had, right? So if there's no exchanges to game, why would you ever 51% attack? Because you're not gonna be able to steal anyone's money. There's nothing, if there's no exchange, you could game, right? Exchanges are the biggest vectors of those things, and or merchants for big value transactions, etc. But obviously, you're starting from nothing like Bitcoin did, and if there's nothing to steal, why spend the money to do an attack? The other aspect, of course, is that you can't double spend if you don't have coins, right? So, how, it's like, it's sort of like a paradox, right? Like, there's no reason to double spend if you don't have coins. And if you're going to get some coins, then once you have those coins, you're adding hash power to the network, which incentivizes other miners to mine as well, which is maybe perhaps some, part of how Bitcoin got bootstrapped. But the point is, then you get the coins and you're kind of invested in the network. And then again, like, who are you going to scam if there's no one to scam, right? Now, it's a complex issue, of course, and how this all will actually play out once things get rolling should be really interesting to see. But what the fuck do we have to lose, right? And now, of course, there is the aspect of merge mining, which you could always change to if you had to. I'm sort of thinking you might start without that, because of everything I just mentioned, and then you kind of transition to that if necessary, but I have to think about it all more. Anyway, coming up on half an hour, gonna end it here, but if you could just do the cloud chain, boom, two nodes, much cleaner. So we'll see. Be back soon. Peace.